From Portland, Oregon, we're APA Compass Radio, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio show. Find podcasts of our program at apacompass.wordpress.com or contact us on Facebook. Thanks for listening to APA Compass Radio. Thanks for supporting APA Compass during this membership drive special. I'm Sarika Mehta. Atul Gawande is a renowned cancer surgeon based out of Boston, Massachusetts. He also writes for The New Yorker. He gained fame for previous books he's written, particularly The Checklist Manifesto. His fourth book, Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End, examines the choices we make at the end of life and what the end of life really means for us. Does it entail using a machine to breathe? Or does the end come when we can no longer contribute to society as we please? These are difficult conversations, and these conversations are unique to our Asian American communities. We sat down together here at KBOO Community Radio and began our conversation when I told him about my only living grandparent, my 93-year-old grandfather, who lives in excellent health in Bombay, India. This is a more of a philosophical question. Like, am I having too high expectations for what we should have in place for our elderly, or is it that I should accept a reality of what is should be in place for that? You know.
Yeah. Look, as countries change and advance, there are certain changes that happen to families as well. And India is going through that right now, and in fact, all of Asia is right. going through that right now. In the United States, in Europe, and in Asia. When we were purely agricultural societies, the multi-generational family was how we got along. And the agricultural society didn't have much money, and so you didn't turn to medicine. Now, in the 19th century, medicine didn't have much to offer.
Right.
Today, it has a lot to offer. But, farming villagers like my grandfather, who lived to 110 in a rural village in India, did not have a lot of healthcare options, shall we say.
Right.
But they had a lot of family options. You know, he had 20 years of needing round-the-clock care. Couldn't be independent. He needed help with bathing, with dressing, with doing a variety of things. But he was, it sounds like your grandfather, pretty sharp. You know, he had some memory lapses here and there, but he still made the business decisions over the farm. People came to him for advice about marriages, and he sat at the head of the table, and we all, venerated him, a word we don't even use in the United States, it is this thing we're nostalgic for. My cousins would say that it was horrifying to hear how people who were aged in the United States would be cared for, like my grandfather would have been in a nursing home. They're like, this would never happen in India. Well, guess what? It's happening. And why is that? Well, economic prosperity came to America in the 19th century and to India now, and China and Korea, because you gave young people freedom to live where they want, work where they want, marry whom they want.
Move out of the house.
They moved out. They went to the cities. They took up opportunities. They became the engine of progress in these societies. And that left the elderly behind. And what is evolving in places like the United States, is that we're building capabilities like hospice and palliative care and also assisted living and home care options that are focused around the idea that people should be able to define their priorities in their life, even if they need help along the way, that they can still have purpose and make contributions to the world the same way my grandfather did, but that it be in a society that allows for those services to come into the home and not necessarily involve enslaving the young people. You know, the multi-generational family worked because the young women were enslaved to do the work around the clock, and the young men would wait until their parents told them what their future was. And, my grandfather's sons reached 80 years old, still waiting and wondering when they would inherit any land so they could have some independent economic future. And the first thing that happens in societies that start to have enough resources. So India's economy is right about where America's was in per capita income in the mid-19th century. China's is closer to the beginning of the 20th century. And as that starts to reach the point that you have enough money for pensions and Social Security, you start seeing what the elderly really do when they have money. And what the elderly do is the same as they did in America. They move out. They don't want to live in the son and daughter's homes under their rules. And the sons and daughters don't want to live under the parents' rules. And we live in what they, the sociologists call, live at an intimate distance. Near, but not too near. You know, we like them maybe down the street.
A comfort zone.
In a comfort zone. You know, everybody having a little bit of their own space. That takes a certain level of prosperity. I visited places in India. I visited the pay and stay homes, which are for the kind of lower middle class that you have, you know, a servant and a cook who are in a home that's a residential home that has six or seven or eight elderly people in a community, and it's and that they help the elderly up and down the stairs and kind of take care of things. That those are starting to emerge, but they still are these places where I meet and I talk to these people. They're bored. They're lonely. There's no purpose to their days because all they're doing is they're being fed and they're being taken to medical appointments. But, you know, what am I here for? And right. Those are what people are hungry for everywhere, U.S., India, other parts of the world.
Well, in Oregon, along with a few other states, we have this legal right to die with dignity, assisted end-of-life procedures. And I was wondering your perspective and your opinions about this from a medical view.
Yeah. Well, so what I came to in the course of sort of researching the book, talking to lots of people, I came to thinking a couple of things. Number one is that if there is unbearable suffering in your life that you are facing, that people really do want the option to have to possibly have an earlier exit that is in their control if that suffering is unsolvable. And it's a small percentage. Only half end up using it because it sounds like, you know, for many people, it's enough to know that that option is there on the shelf if it should get so bad. At the same time, I really am concerned about the idea that the goal that we articulate is that we have a good death. That is not the goal. You know, in India, I was there, and this debate is going on very strongly as well. And, you know, in India, having assisted death alarms me as a major option because it's a place where we've not taken seriously people's pain, for instance. After surgery there, we frequently send people home after orthopedic surgery or after major abdominal surgery with little more than Tylenol, and that we don't supply narcotics because there's a lot of stigma about the idea that you would supply narcotics to people. And people with terminal cancer are rarely provided pain medication, even though they're in severe pain often. And so then you offer people the possibility of assisted death and have failed to provide any relief from suffering that's possible. Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you chose the assisted death, but it's a sign of our failure that they're choosing that. Assisted living is much harder than assisted death, and I don't want our willingness to provide options that take away suffering to preclude the idea that we might help people take away suffering mainly by offering real support and medical capability.
In these hard conversations and discussions you have to have with patients and their families, do you notice especially in our Asian Pacific American communities, do you notice a specific shift, a trend that helps or hurts the process?
Well, there's a lot of concern and desire to try to protect, someone who has an advanced cancer. I'm a cancer surgeon, from the knowledge of what's going on. But I find that less and less. You know, it certainly was the case, I think, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that you would see families where they would say, well, don't tell mom. I think we're becoming more and more comfortable with the fact that we inflict more suffering when people don't know what's happening to them, and they kind of know that things are not good. I mean, you know, you're talking about people who are going through tremendous pain increasing difficulty breathing or increasing difficulty with their heart, and it's not going to get better. And they know it, but no one is acknowledging it. I start the book with the story of Ivan Illich, the death of Ivan Illich by Tolstoy, how he might want to come to his end and simply be able to even say goodbyes. And this is something everybody wants around the world. This is a really important role and opportunity that people have. And ironically, the existence of medicine has removed, even in our Asian cultures, has removed us from this being a very normal and natural process of life.
Well, Atul Gawande, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me here for APA Compass.
And thank you.
That was cancer surgeon and writer Atul Gawande, and the book is Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End. I'm Sarika Mehta. Thanks for listening.